Okay.
Senate Education Policy Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone. And we have three items before us. Senator Saltzman, Senator Bonhoeff, and I also will have a bill to be considered today. We'll start with Senator Saltzman, Senate File 866.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm here today with Senate File 866, and this was a provision that we passed last year in our education policy bill. It was part of Senator Bonhoeff, Senate File number 10, with the shared services as part of our Senate reform package, and this is now a separate proposal. And this follows through on some of the discussion that we just had, where we really heard some wonderful testimony of how scientific research-based reading instruction really impacts children and students. And this particular bill, I think, is very important because you have in your packets a report card that shows our NAEP scores in Minnesota, particularly on fourth grade reading. And as you turn to page, page three of that, it shows a chart that shows our reading scores. And NAEP is the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It is the only nationally representative and continuing assessment of what American students know in various subject areas. It's a common matrix and metric for all schools, and it stays essentially the same so that it provides a clear picture of student academic progress across years. And you can see that while we've seen some improvement in terms of the students that are below basic or basic, we're not doing as well as we should. And we absolutely cannot tolerate when 30% of our children are not proficient in reading. It is one of the most difficult tasks that these children will have to master throughout their lives. And why is it so unfortunate? Because if you do not learn to read and you live in America, you do not make it in life. If you consider that reading skills serve as the major avenue to learning about what other people, about history, social studies, language arts, science, mathematics, and other contact areas, if this is not mastered in school, if children do not learn to read, their general knowledge, their spelling and writing abilities, and their vocabulary development suffers in kind. And what is most troubling is that when children do not learn to read by third grade, their chances of catching up becomes almost so very difficult. When children are referred to special education, we hear repeatedly that how difficult it is for them to ever really graduate from that program. And so if we can focus, again, on making sure that children have the instruction that they need, what we hear repeatedly is that many of these children, it's not that they have necessarily permanent disabilities, but they are instructional casualties. And again, we heard earlier about the success of when children have the ability to be taught with reading interventions. Now, one of the things I want to note before we start on the testimony is that this bill has been somewhat controversial, and some of the folks who are most concerned about this is that they believe that this bill has to do with the kind of instruction that will be required in our schools. And I want to refer to our state statutes 120B.12, which is reading intervention. And this really has to do with the goal that all our children are going to read by the end of third grade. And it really talks about in our schools that interventions may include but are not limited to requiring attendance in summer schools, intensified reading instruction that may require students to be removed from regular classrooms. It identifies that each district shall identify staff development needs to ensure that elementary teachers are able to implement comprehensive, scientifically based, and balanced reading instruction. Notice are able, not must. It also identifies that each district, that the intervention methods or programs are selected by the district. So this has nothing to do, we're not touching this statute. That what we're going to be talking about today is what we want to see being taught in our teacher preparation programs in higher education. I've referred repeatedly to the fact that what we want to do here is make sure that every teacher has every tool in their tool belt. It doesn't mean that we're going to make them use them or they need to use them with each student, but think about if you're a patient who has cancer and you want a doctor who has all the different possible interventions. That doesn't mean that they're going to need to use them on you or a loved one, but you want to make sure that a person is trained in the best strategies, and that's what this is about. I also want to note that we really want to focus on our pre-service teachers, because today we're going to hear about what happens when a young teacher shows up in their first classroom, and if they don't have a strong foundation in this, those children miss out on potentially having those strategies available to them. So we're going to be talking about how we really deal with really working with the pipeline. These are very important strategies. We know that they work. Now, the one thing that happened with Senator Bonoff's bill when that bill was heard was what one of the people who came to the table and was essentially opposed to her bill noted that phonics needs to be flushed out of Senate File 10. Well, I was concerned about that because this bill is not about phonics. It's about comprehensive, scientifically-based reading instruction. Phonics is one piece of that.
Senator Saltzman,
yes.
Is there any change in this bill from what we had in the omnibus
There is no change, and so, Mr. Chair, I will move quickly to my testifiers so that they can address, I believe, some of the continuing controversy. And I'd like to start with Ms. Beth Erickson.
And, Madam Chair, the controversy may not be with this committee necessarily.
Right. I understand that. Thank you. Ms. Erickson.
Thank you. I want to thank the chair and the committee members for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate File 866, and I want to thank you for your unyielding support, those of you who are on the policy committee last session. We appreciate that. We're here again this year, and we want to get this done. We have thousands of Minnesota students that are not able to read at grade level. This is a huge problem, and the appropriate response is to do whatever it takes to ensure success for all of our students. The basic facts, the basic facts are this. The Board of Teaching requires a teacher preparation program submit syllabi for review of all required reading courses. Advocates of Senate File 866 have spent days studying these syllabi related to reading instruction. The bottom line is that less than 5% of all course credits in Minnesota, four-year undergraduate teacher preparation programs relate to the teaching of reading. Too little time is allocated in our undergraduate teacher programs for prospective teachers to learn how to teach reading. Results from national surveys indicate that beginning teachers feel unprepared to teach reading, and especially to meet the diverse cultural backgrounds of students learning English as a second language. The teacher licensure test that we currently have is for a licensed elementary teacher has 10 out of 120 questions that evaluate the topic of reading instruction. Given the composite scoring on the test, a teacher can fail all 10 questions on reading instruction and still obtain a license. We need better accountability. From January, the question that we've been hearing is, why do we need Senate File 866 when the proposed reading rules are now in the rulemaking process? From January of 07 to June of 08, the Board of Teaching Reading Task Force worked with and involved many different broad stakeholders under the effective leadership of Executive Director Karen Baumer. Eventually, the Reading Task Force reached consensus and produced a specific recommendation for reading rule. However, there was a concerted effort by opponents of these rules and consequently this legislation by certain members of the Reading Task Force to derail the consensus proposal. And it was only after intervention by policymakers, legislators, Commissioner of Education, Board of Teaching Executive Director, and the Governor that this frustrated procedure was put to a halt. Policy leaders again need to support Senate File 866 and support the gains made by the Reading Task Force so that we have stronger reading rule and consequently stronger assessment of our teachers who are candidates for licensure. The best outcome from the Board of Teaching process will come from a strong policy statement and strong legislation from you, our policymakers. Every child has the right to read, and it's the responsibility of the adults to see that it happens. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to introduce at this time Mike Savage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for your time today. I've been excited about this opportunity. And I must say, Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn represents the district in which my school is in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, Forest Hills. So I thank him for his service.
Duly noted.
My name is Mike Savage. I've been a first grade teacher for 12 years. That ended last year. I am now the educational coordinator at Forest Hills Elementary School in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. My 12-year first grade career spent 9 years in North Minneapolis, where I worked with a diverse group of students in a very, very low socioeconomic community. The last 3 years, I've served in Eden Prairie, Minnesota at Forest Hills Elementary School, which has been just an absolute highlight of my career. Making a long story short, I will tell you how I arrived here today. In Minneapolis, I was involved in a Reading First school. And a Reading First school is a school that obtained dollars to be trained in the five components of literacy. And those five components of literacy, of course, we know are phonics, phonemic awareness, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. I resisted it, honestly, when I first heard about it, and because I thought what I was currently doing was what was best. Well, through time, I learned that, indeed, what I was doing was not best because I had a fair amount of students not proficient by the end of a school year. And it was when I adopted the five components of literacy that I started noticing more and more and more of my students were proficient by the end of first grade. Ultimately, the last couple of years, I was able to obtain a percentage of 100% of my students maintaining reading proficiency, which led me to two pretty cool awards last year. One was Teacher of the Year in Eden Prairie Schools, and one was the Golden Apple Award from the Chamber of Commerce from Eden Prairie. So fantastic acknowledgments. And that kicked off a new ambition for me in administration. This year I serve as the educational coordinator at Forest Hills Elementary School, and the position basically is an assistant principal. I direct the curricular decisions of our site. And what I have done, and I'm quite proud of, honestly, is I've brought the five components to Forest Hills Elementary School and facilitated some training over the summer. And I am proud to say that all of our staff members have embraced these five components of literacy to the point where I have heard comments such as, "Wow, Mike, this is amazing stuff. Why haven't I heard about it?" And I said, I don't know, and I didn't hear about it myself until I went through Reading First. It's the cutting edge of research in literacy. It's very different. It looks different from the outside, but if you're in the classroom, you know something different is going on. And part of our conversations over the summer with staff members that continue through the school year are involved specifically on the five components of literacy, but in addition to that, we have very, very difficult discussions on high expectations. In other words, do you believe in your heart of hearts that every single kid in your classroom can be proficient by the end of the year? And if you don't, why? And we engage people in these conversations, and they're absolutely fascinating. And then to be able to throw out the research, the five components of literacy, to say, here is how you can get your children to live up to your high expectations and be proficient by the time they leave your classroom. It was a challenging message to deliver. Some people embraced it right away, some people didn't. But I'm proud to say more and more individuals in our staff, 6-7 months into the school year, are realizing that indeed it is possible that every single child in your classroom can be proficient. And it's been really exciting to serve in this position, to impact more than just 22 to 25 first graders, and now to have an impact on 600 to 650 first graders at Forest Hills Elementary. In addition to the changes that Forest Hills has embraced in the five components of literacy, other organizations are taking notice. Minnesota State University Mankato has contacted our school and has caught wind of some of the potential changes that they may be having to make in their undergrad licensing program and have visited our site Forest Hills, they have come and have done a tour, have met with myself, our reading specialist, Mr. Jeff Thielen, and one of our second grade teachers, Miss Nicola Huss, who was an example of someone who did not have this training and embraced it right away, and is seeing incredible results in her classroom this year. Just months into this one new year, the university has taken notice, and they've come and they were impressed, and they had open ears, and they wanted to learn more and more about this. And in fact, tomorrow, after the session here, I'll be going back to Forest Hills to prepare for a trip to Mankato tomorrow, where myself and the two other individuals that I just mentioned to you will be traveling down to the university to talk to undergrad students specifically on the five components of literacy, the changes that we've taken on at Forest Hills, and in addition, what are some practical things that you can take from the sessions that we're going to deliver on Friday and put them right into your student teaching experience right away. So thank you for your time today. I was thrilled to share.
Thank you, Mr. Savage. Senator Hatton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I just want to take a moment to, first of all, thank Mr. Savage for your coming today, but more importantly, for your work in the school. And Forest Hills is one of the four elementary schools in Eden Prairie. Our three older children were all students there, I think, a little bit before your time. So I don't think that they ever had you in class, but I wish they would have. I think it's just encouraging to have a person who's dedicated to this and being recognized for his excellence, as he mentioned, Teacher of the Year. And I did just want to ask if he would care to comment, and I don't want to put you on the spot if you're not prepared to or don't wish to, but Eden Prairie does have a fairly significant population of Somali students. Many of them are at Forest Hills. And could you make any comment about how this program is working with that group, which is a challenging academic demographic, and maybe you have something you want to say.
Mr. Samich.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be thrilled to share. Thanks for asking that great question. It is an honor to work with the Somali community. I'll start with that. It is an absolute honor. It's fascinating relationships have formed. And honestly, from what I bring to the table as a Christian and what they potentially bring to the table as Muslims, and to process through that makes for very, very engaging conversations. It goes back to high expectations. It goes back to high expectations. Eden Prairie Schools has taken on an initiative at the district level in racial equity, and asking the Pacific Educational Group coming to our school and district and asking us, why is there an achievement gap, a racial achievement gap, racial disparities happening in your school district? And we look at each other and we say, well, we don't know. That's a problem. It's on us. It's on us to close that racial achievement gap. So when we speak about the Somali students that are at that Forest Hills, a lot of our conversations are, how do we reduce that achievement gap all the while holding every single student in our school to high expectations? And it's going back to that same question that I brought up earlier. What is it that, if I walked around my school and asked, do you have high expectations for your students? And I can go to any teacher across the state and say, do you have high expectations for your students? They're going to say, yes, I do. They're going to say, yes, I do. However, our high expectations typically give us 77% proficiency. There's a 25% gap. Most likely, those are students of color. So the question that we ask, what is it that you're doing that lowers your expectation as a teacher, and you don't even know it? You didn't even know you lowered your expectation. Is it because a student comes into your class with a different skin color? And is it because you have stereotypes and you have misconceptions that child does not have a stable family life with no data or no research to back that up? Do you have high degrees of sympathy and empathy for a family that immigrated to the United States and have made assumptions that their entire life has been devoted to escaping Somalia, and therefore have not had the time to read, to even think about school as an importance? Do you believe that just because you have a high degree of sympathy and empathy? What I have learned is that there is a possibility that high degrees of sympathy and empathy directly correlate to lower expectations. And those are conversations that we're having that are helping reduce this achievement gap.
Thank you. Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Savage, thank you so much for those inspiring comments. And I'm going to have to just go one step beneath those comments, because there's been some concern among opponents of this legislation that particular ethnic groups don't respond well to this particular reading instruction strategy. So could you address your comments to specifically what you've noticed in that regard?
Mr. Savage.
Great question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mean to sound like a broken record, and believe me, staff members at my school might chuckle behind closed doors that all Mike talks about is high expectations, but really, it comes to that. I really believe it comes to that. Why do we believe that a research-based approach is not going to affect all students in our school? I have data from at least the last two school years where every single child in my classroom has read proficiency, and 40% of our students at Forest Hills Elementary are Somali students, and they have indeed reached rates of proficiency. The instruction didn't change for those students. The instructions that my white students received was the same instructions that my Somali students received. All with that frame of reference of, I believe in my heart of hearts that at one time in my career, I held a certain group of kids to a lower expectation. I made a paradigm shift somewhere along the way that now I believe that every single child can succeed in my classroom. The delivery of a core curriculum in its purest form is what will benefit kids. So taking the core curriculum in Eden Prairie Schools, which is Scott Forsman, embedding the five components of literacy, phonemic awareness, phonics, vocabulary, comprehension, and fluency, and then understanding that every child, no matter their skin color, if they can't sound out a nonsense word, which we heard in testimony earlier, that means that child needs phonemic awareness and phonics instruction in an intervention. It doesn't matter their skin color. It matters that they need phonics and phonemic awareness. And so that's what we bring to the table.
So, Mr. Chair, on that point, I do have another testifier who could address that a little bit, and also to talk a little bit about how we're retraining teachers. I know you want to watch the clock here.
Yes.
So,
okay.
So, Ms. Sunday, and we know why Mr. Savage was Teacher of the Year in Eden Prairie. I just think this is some of the best testimony. Well, we've had wonderful people at this table, but very impressive. You've really brought this home.
Ms. Sunday.
Thank you. I'm Arlene Sunday. I'm an educational consultant, and I do a lot of teacher training in different settings. This legislation is rooted in NRP, and of course, we are all familiar with the five components. We know that they studied 115,000, they reviewed 115,000 different studies to come up with the five components and the pieces that go with it. Now, after NRP, the National Reading Panel, was disbanded or had published their report, the NLP was formed, the National Literacy Panel, and that focused primarily on students whose first language was not English. They found, the bottom line is that they found that the same five components were very effective with second language students. The same person, Donald Langenberg, was the chair of both of these committees. So the reviews and the strategies were the same, and the findings were the same. I can personally attest to this. I have been training teachers in India, Pakistan, China, Thailand, Kuwait, Egypt, Jamaica. And in those countries, they are using a system, actually, that I wrote, and they are using these five components to teach their children. Now, the five components are important for teachers to know, but it does not mean that every child needs every one of them. Some children learn to read from Sesame Street. If you put them in a closet for a couple of months, they would come out reading Martex and Canon. However, every teacher needs to be able to address every need of every child, and that's why they need to really be well versed in the five components. They need to know who needs what, when, and for how long. Now, as I said, I'm a curriculum writer, and I work for a a publishing company in St. Paul has published my materials. So I get around the country and do installations. I don't do as many as the staff people do, but I do them. And this is involved with teacher training. We have recently been training the teachers in St. Paul. And I have a map. There are teachers who have come from 29 elementary schools, from middle schools, and from high schools to be trained in how to use the five components of reading. We actually have trained teachers across the country in 250 school districts, over 6,000 teachers. Many of those school districts are in Minnesota, as in Eden Prairie and some of the others. My concern is that very frequently when we go in to train teachers, we are ending up teaching special education teachers. And that's fine, because special education teachers need to take those kids who are in special education. They need to be closing the gap for those kids. But they are mopping up the mess. When are we going to start to stem the flow? When are we going to get in, as the America's Choice people mentioned? You make better progress faster if you're working with the K-1 children. And the NRP said, and No Child Left Behind is saying, children under the third grade level, they should be reading on grade level by third grade level. We need to stem the flow. We need to teach teachers coming into the classroom how to teach reading before children are falling through the cracks. I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Sunday.
I just note very briefly, if you will look at Senate File 866, I believe the copy you have on lines 4.1 through 4.4, and this was Senator Wieger's legislation from, I believe, 2003, is that teacher preparation programs are to include research-based best practices as outlined in Section 122A.06. This has been their responsibility. And why is this test so important? Because this was to be done. And I believe that by instituting this test and ensuring that it covers these areas along with other things, it is an embedded test. It's not a separate test. This is our way of making a statement. This is important. We have expectations. Staff development will continue to be important. But young teachers need to come out of our colleges with a strong foundation which we can build on. And Ms. Stern, if you would speak briefly, because your family foundation has been funding the reteaching and staff development in schools.
Welcome, Ms. Stern. And I'd also like to welcome all the students here from Cheska. I believe most of you are seniors, that you are very proficient in reading and all the other expectations we have. I look forward to when any of you might be here as legislators someday, if that's a part of your career.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My senator is also present, Jen Olson. About 9 years ago, our family established the June Stern Family Foundation with the help and inspiration of my late mother-in-law, June Stern, who was 88 at the time, who embodied the idea that it's never too late to start something new. She was a slow reader all her life. She wanted to help children avoid the hardships and frustration that she had experienced in school. You can read her story at our website, which is junesternfoundation.org. Our very small nonprofit awards scholarships to K-3 teachers and grants to elementary schools in the metro area for pursuing a research-based method of teaching reading that meets the guidelines of the National Reading Panel, which Ms. Sunday told you about. These are the teaching criteria called for in the Senate bill you are hearing about today. They are scientifically proven instructional strategies that will help all students, but are crucial for those with dyslexia, the most common learning disability. And when we started learning about reading instruction, the teachers we met at conferences and the teachers who apply for our scholarships told us they had never learned in college what they needed to know to teach reading effectively to their struggling students. Our foundation has tried to figure out for all these 9 years how to get this information to teachers at the pre-service stage rather than waiting until they are already in the classroom. Our efforts at helping them in in-service professional development seem to be insignificant when education at the college and university level could be so much more cost-effective and efficient. This bill is the way to make that happen. Others today have told you about the deplorable reading scores in Minnesota, but I want to read you some comments from the sincere and hardworking teachers who have never been given the tools to do the job we have entrusted them with. Here are just a few of the many similar comments from our scholarship recipients. Linda Weibold, first grade, Redeemer Lutheran. My colleagues and I strongly feel this course should be taught in college. This class has made and will make such a difference in children's lives. Jessica Grono, second grade, Creek Valley Elementary. This method teaches in an explicit, systematic way that is so critical for young learners. It starts teaching phonemic awareness, phonics, and decoding from the smallest unit, and then builds as the student becomes more confident with their skill. The rules, generalizations, and rationale are so meaningful. During college, none of these aspects were covered in our reading courses. Sheila Vang, kindergarten, Peter Hobart School. I would recommend this training to my colleagues. The research shows the need for students to know the code, and I feel that if educators teach the code, we are then providing a solid foundation for reading. Chuck Paulson, third grade, Royal Oaks Elementary. This training has taught me more about reading instruction than my master's in reading and 20 years in the classroom. It is a foundation that teachers need in order to differentiate to all students. Kristen Troop, kindergarten, Kaposia Education Center. Most teacher training and beginning reading strategies is less than adequate. In students at my school who have received this instruction and practice, I have seen great improvement. They are much more enthusiastic about reading and are extremely proud of their accomplishments and growth. Lynn Robertson, kindergarten, Nativity of Mary. I feel much more aware of the steps necessary by a student for a student to progress from a non-reader to a reader. This method teaches all children well, not just those that read easily. Jill Pilar, second grade, St. Ambrose. Now I know how to help my students. Sharon Fong, grades 1 through 3, Kaposia Learning Center. Many students would benefit from this structured method of reading instruction, but it is not emphasized by colleges and universities. Sarah Grind, second grade, Cedar Ridge School. As a classroom teacher, I feel so much more confident with teaching reading to my struggling readers. I have a plan of action now rather than more trial and error. These are people who have all received scholarships from us to learn this method of teaching. Sherry Levitt, kindergarten, Zachary Lane Elementary. This has been the most informational and satisfying program that has come into my professional life. I can honestly say that all of my 22 students, this is kindergarten, were reading by the end of kindergarten, some better than others, but they were all reading. Ann Klug, kindergarten, Zachary Lane. Systematic, explicit instruction works. It helps children. I could not be more enthusiastic. Nancy Hansen, first grade, Park Valley School. I feel so strongly that these skills are needed for every teacher who teaches reading. The class should be required for every college student majoring in education at any level. I am here to encourage you to listen carefully to what the advocates of this bill are saying today and to give you your support to this extremely important piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more testifier, and I will note there is not a fiscal note on this legislation. So when we're looking for good things, that's why we're looking at this in policy. There is no fiscal note.
Good morning, and thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Mary Platt, and I live now in Edina. And in my career, I've been an elementary classroom teacher, a parent of a struggling reader, a learning disabilities teacher, a tutor of children who are struggling to read, and at the present time, I also do teacher training. In having gotten my bachelor's degree in education and a master's degree in education, I still felt that I really didn't know what I was going to do on Monday morning when I walked into a classroom or with a group of children and teach those struggling readers. I didn't really know how to do it. And then my son's tutor recommended the Reading Center in Rochester, which is where I went, and it opened the whole new doors to me and every child that I've come in contact since then. For that reason, because of the influence that I had and because I'm familiar with the Reading Center, I'm going to read something from Nancy Sears, who is the executive director of the Reading Center, about a Rochester Public School staff development training offered by the Reading Center to some of the schools in the Rochester district. And so this is from Nancy Sears. During the 2007-2008 school year, the Reading Center trained 20 Rochester Pinewood Elementary School teachers, which included K through 3 classroom teachers, ESOL, English as a Second Language teachers, LD teachers, and district reading teachers. This year, 2008-2009, we are training 18 additional Rochester district teachers, including 13 teachers from Longfellow Elementary School, which is, again, including the same teachers, K through 2, ESOL, LD, and Title I, and reading teachers. And they are also training this year the remaining 5 Pinewood 4th and 5th grade teachers at their request. The training has been completely teacher-driven. Longfellow Elementary has seen such strong improvement that they want the rest of the teachers in their school to be trained during the 2009-2010 school year, along with the 3rd school in the district. The common theme we hear from all of these experienced teachers is, why didn't I learn this in my college education classes? The year-long training consists of 30 hours of lecture and skill practice with peers, and then coaching with feedback during each teacher's regular class time with their students. So they're going in and coaching teachers in the classroom when they're working with their kids. The teachers are learning the structure of the English language so that they can teach it to the students in their classroom. Regular education classrooms of 30 students are learning the building blocks needed for proficient reading and spelling, and they've been mentioned before, so I won't mention them again. The ESOL, LD, Title I, and reading students are receiving additional reading support from the support staff that has also been trained. According to the teachers, the students are highly motivated and engaged and successful in their learning through this instruction that is based on the findings of the National Reading Panel. And as an aside, I would just like to add, this kind of instruction does not hurt any student in the class, including the one who learned to read in the closet that Arlene talked about. It's not anything that's harmful to anybody. And then Nancy laid out the demographics of Longfellow Elementary School in Rochester. It has a population of 263 children, an Asian population of 5%, Black, 26%, Hispanic, 28%, and White, 41%. So it's quite a mixed school. They have LEP students, 43%, special ed students, 10%, free and reduced price lunches, 67% of the student body at that school. And Nancy ends her report there, and I would just like to say one thing as I close. Learning to read is a very complex process, and the most important skill that students need to learn for school and for life. Teachers can't teach what they don't know. They need to learn the structure of the English language based on the 5 essential components of effective reading instruction, and they need to learn how to teach reading in a sequential, systematic, and explicit way so that they're not leaving anything children guessing about how it works. What we're talking about is teaching children how to break the code of the English language. And if you want to translate something yourself, you'd find out what the code is before you do it. Thank you very much. I appreciate your attention today.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick comment on Senator Wieger's remarks to the Chaska students about you becoming possible legislators someday. It really can happen. I'm a Chaska High School graduate, and I've been serving here for 13 years now. And you probably, and my younger brother, Kurt Klingelhutz, is a teacher at Chaska, and my daughter's teaching elementary school in Chaska at Guardian Angels. which really fascinates me. I'm just fascinated by this whole discussion today about teaching reading. And since I have a daughter that is teaching third grade right now and probably did not have this available to her when she was in college, I am wondering what we will do with all of the students that are all of the teachers that haven't had this opportunity. Now, I'm hearing about workshops and some school districts adopting this, but there's a lot of teachers out there, and how do we get them the training? How long is a typical reading program? If it's offered through the colleges, would they be able to get the credits for it that a lot of teachers are always seeking to move up a lane? How will it work? If they do the workshops, does that affect them or with the lanes? Or are they not encouraged because it doesn't affect their pay level any? I'm just wondering about existing teachers.
To address that, in the original in this original bill last year, Senator Olson, who I want to acknowledge is my partner in crime here in this, in that she has worked with me equally, she should be at the table with me today, is that we did address that. And one of the things that we originally had in this bill was that for renewal, that a teacher would need to pass this test as well. And again, it's not the test that makes someone competent, it's that you went out and you sought the training. And what's happening right now is it's really an issue of money or luck. Do you have a teacher who, either a parent who went out and found tutoring for you and you had the money, or do you have the luck of the draw of having a teacher who knows this? So this is sort of a beginning point, Senator Roebling, is that we believe we have to make sure the pipeline, that students coming out of our schools are getting trained, and that we also make this in statute now, districts are to make sure that as part of their ongoing staff development that there is training in the comprehensive scientifically based reading strategies. But we really are building the infrastructure, and what most teachers are doing is they're finding these courses through the Reading Center or through Groves Academy or through other workshops that are being offered, and that we've heard from within higher ed that many times that these strategies are in more graduate programs or are embedded in special education. And our point is, why not make these available to kids before they get to special ed? That's the whole point of taking this out and making sure that it's in the general classroom. So that's another discussion, I think. This is sort of a starting point that we really whittled down our original bill because it was more of a comprehensive view of how we bring everyone up to speed. But there was a lot of pushback that we were maybe going too far in requiring this test for existing teachers. That may be another discussion.
Okay. Can I add something?
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you've members have looked at the article that is that Senator Saltzman has provided here on "We Must Stop Our Failing Children" from the New York Times, that the Haskins Laboratory, which is connected with Yale University, says that 95% of all children can learn to read relatively easily, regardless of whether they're rich or poor, bright or burdened with a low IQ. And yet, the paragraph lower shows their Connecticut is having some of the same kinds of results on NAEP scores and children not reaching proficiency that we are. And they have pursued the same approach. We had one of the things that I think we ought to do and hope we can achieve that awareness and acceptance of the fact that that 95%, do we really believe, as Mr. Savage has so well stated, that we really are having the expectations and the understanding and the belief that 95% can learn? And having done that, if we're committed to that, we do have set-asides in our regular funding formula for staff development. There are sample tests online that are similar to what we believe will be the outcome of the process, and we expect to be the outcome of the process for measuring teacher competence, that current teachers can take free. And the answers are there, too. So they can know where they might have weakness and take advantage, and hopefully we will start making available information about some of the resources so that other teachers can have some of the same experiences that you have had and that you provide, as Ms. Sunday talks about. There's a whole range of opportunities, and hopefully we'll see them appearing, too, in our colleges and universities. So we've backed off to the pre-service because we feel that that's an important place to do it, but hopefully it will spread throughout the whole system and quickly turn around, because we can't afford to be having these children passing in third grade and fourth grade, and we see it in the dropout rate. We see it in so many different ways, that the consequences of not having this ability. So thank you for bringing it up, Senator Roebling, because we've had that burden from the beginning, and we're just having to do step by step, but we have no intention of giving up on getting the whole route until 95% at least in every school are reading at proficiency by third grade.
Okay, that issue is duly noted, not before us, but part of the overall consideration at some other point perhaps. I remember, too, an excellent handout that Garrison Keillor, the Prairie Home Companion, wrote on this subject, and might be a good handout for later. Is there anyone else that would like to address the committee?
Can I?
Before we take action.
Can I?
Ms. Ballmer.
Yes.
Shall we sit?
Sorry. Yes.
And then we need to move on. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Quickly, just because you've heard the Board of Teaching referenced both this year in this legislation as well as last year, I thought it was important to provide some context and background and some updates for you with respect to where we are in our process regarding our reading proposed new standards. As you may recall, back in 2007, the Board of Teaching began working in earnest in an effort to review and revise our teacher preparation standards. These are the standards that are applied and required for those folks in the pipeline, as you've heard, who are going to become teachers. This is the Board of Teaching's purview, and we began a very significant effort to look at that. So we had a task force that was convened and worked very hard on this very enormous task of this revision process through some real targeted and concentrated work, through the input of literally dozens and dozens and dozens of stakeholders the input that we solicited, through passionate dialogues, we were able in the task force to come to a consensus in terms of proposed standards. This was a difficult task. The task force, you should know, was comprised of members of our higher education institutions, our faculty members there, and representatives of numerous reading organizations, as well as folks who had been actively engaged in the legislative process here on the bills relating to reading. So it was a diverse, a very diverse group, and it was not an easy task. We did, in the end, come to a consensus about the proposed standards. We are thrilled to be able to share that with you today. And so I do want to note that all those task force members should be commended. They are wonderful, passionate, insightful, thoughtful people who care deeply about our children and their success in reading. And so all that to say, last July, we were at the Board of Teaching able to launch our rulemaking process to bring these new proposed reading standards to life. We are now in that rulemaking process, and we have a hearing set, a public hearing, as per the rulemaking process, for April 24th. So we are marching forward with the proposed rules, and excited to bring closure to this important work that we've been doing for now quite some time. Specific to the language that you have before you, the Board of Teaching was very grateful last year to be working with the authors closely, and they were very responsive to concerns that we raised, so we're grateful for that. We were in a supportive position of the bill language last year. We remain so, with just a couple of notes, that there are a couple places in the bill that we believe that it's the reading community that needs to work out the language. And I am not a reading expert, and I defer on those specific pieces to the reading experts, and know that there we do have people with great expertise, and so I defer there. One of the key components that you've heard of the bill is this assessment piece. That's and one of the responsive places of the dialogue last year was to allow for the assessment to be embedded within existing reading or existing licensure tests. That is what we intend to do. And so we're very serious and committed to that, making sure that the proposed new reading standards are in fact assessed, and that will be the case. There was language that was of some concern in the end of the bill, I believe Section 6, that was changed actually in a recent hearing that we had some questions about, not relating to reading, but just a policy precedent. And so we've seen some movement there on that language as well. So we stand ready to answer any questions about our process. We believe that what we are doing at the Board of Teaching is fully in alignment with the intent of this bill. And so I would be pleased to answer any questions that you might have.
And Ms. Ballmer, you support the bill?
Mr. Chair, we do support the language of the bill.
And Ms. Ballmer, is there there's no cost impact or fiscal impact?
Mr. Chair, that's right. The Board of Teaching does, we are already in a rulemaking process. Okay. We had committed to that as far as the assessment piece. There will be no cost to the Board of Teaching for that because, as noted, that will be embedded into existing licensure examinations. Though there is a cost on the candidate end, but not to the Board of Teaching, but they would that it does not reflect a new cost because of the way that the standards will be embedded in the existing tests.
And Ms. Ballmer, could you briefly elaborate more on Section 6 on the precedent you
Certainly.
Mentioned?
Mr. Chair, this was recently changed in the hearing prior, and there was so what you have before you is simply language that does not allow the Board of Teaching to adopt rules until the adjournment of this regular session. We believe actually that will be the case given our rulemaking process. We are heading to a hearing in April. We'll have another month after that before we hear back from the administrative law judge. So we're looking at a June or July adoption date. Regardless, we wonder about the precedent okay. just in general.
Thank you. And we have one other testifier.
Yes, Mary Kirchhoff. Thank you. Good morning, Senators and Mr. Chair and committee members. I appreciate being here. I'm here on an advisory capacity from the Edina Public Schools and the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I'm here to talk to you about four areas of the bill that we would hope you would consider adapting. One of the things I'd like to share before we start, so that you know, I'm a teacher. I work in the capacity on special assignment in the Edina Public Schools. My license is in Minnesota, an elementary teacher, K-12 special education teacher, and a K-12 reading teacher.
Ms. Kirchhoff, is there changes you're recommending?
I am, yes. Thank you. Specifically, those changes in the four areas are, I'm requesting that the language changes that have application for all children and do not incur systemic costs to the school districts to implement. The language of direct instruction be replaced with the word instruction, which is currently in rule, or explicit instruction, as Ms. Stearns recommended. Reliable, which
Senator
is
Senator Rummel?
Mr. Chairman, could you tell us where you are in the bill?
Okay, thank you. Just would you would guide me through this because this is not something I normally do. I'd appreciate it.
I think I know where that is, Mr. Yeah. Chair. The word that she's is online, I believe, 2.26. Replicated. That's
okay.
a different issue.
No, you're correct. Thank you for helping.
The direct instruction is on line 2.26, and I do have an author's amendment when we're done to address that.
Okay. We'd also like you to look at balanced. And that would be on 4.7. Balance was in before, and it's been struck. And we would like you to look at reliable at 1. Is it, you say 1.3?
1.13,
okay. Additionally, we are requesting that the reading test in the legislation be allowed to go along with the Board of Teaching, but since Karen just addressed that so eloquently, I won't do so. I'd like to first talk about direct instruction. The proposed legislation inserts it, and we're concerned that the word direct since in curriculum is also often associated with special programs that teach a smaller percent of children who need scripted language, procedures, and special materials when they are taught reading is inappropriate for many children. We have less confusing language in legislation that would be explicit. That research-based term would mean that all educators would teach all children skills and strategies under the five pillars of reading in an explicit way. This term would not exclude the use of indirect instruction, but would be an umbrella term that included it. We think that this is more appropriate. The language of direct instruction is overly prescriptive in nature and unreasonably creates requirements for purchasing new materials and assessments and licensures tailored to the programs to help struggling readers, but not those that are making good progress. The current materials that we use to teach our students have solid research based, and the current language calls for the five areas of reading. I've heard quite a few people here to say it's new. It's not new. You've had it in legislation prior, and the school districts have paid attention to those five areas. So the current materials we use have that research base. They're carefully vetted, and they work with the requirements and licensure. I believe that while this was designed with good intent, that it is misguided. It does not address the needs of most students. The term direct instruction would legislate requirements that force replacement materials in places like Edina without funding to do so. I do believe that direct instruction, and I am highly trained in it, and I was trained in it in 1970s when I went through school, and I've gone back and sought additional training in these methods. I believe in these methods for a group of children that needs them. But for the group of children who learns to read quickly and easily, the focus on comprehension, vocabulary, and fluency are paramount. And even those children that learn to read, as one of the other presenters suggested, in a closet, still need instruction all the way through early childhood and grade 12. Our MCA tests in high school, you guys took it last year, calls for proficiency in all five areas in a balanced reading program. Oh, was it hard enough that it made you leave? It's an extremely difficult reading test. And it forces kids to be able to go to high levels of critical thinking. And a balanced approach to literacy is what reaches that. We need not to think of reading as decoding. If I put text up that said to you, the blugs have moved over the glugs and are crunching towards Sisistaton, you could decode that. But what does it mean? Nothing without an understanding of the vocabulary, the background knowledge, and prior concepts. So balanced us is critically important, and we ask you to leave that word in. It's not referring to whole language. It is not referring to wars and competition among reading programs. Balance is referring to those five areas and saying that children need instruction in phonics, phonemic awareness, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension equally. Balanced scientific information is important, but I just can't implore you enough to leave that concept in, because it is critical for teachers through early childhood and grade 12 to see that term.
Senator Saltzman.
Yes, and to that point, Mr. Chair, I would like to refer again to the state statute 120B.12, which is reading intervention, and under subdivision 4, under point 1, I am not striking balanced reading instruction from anything that a school district. This bill is only about teacher preparation programs. It does not touch, it will not impact anything that a school has to implement. And that is one of the most troubling confusions that the opponents of this legislation continue to bring up. We are not going to change any curriculum in any school. I believe Mr. Savage earlier mentioned when he was able to use these strategies, he was able to use it with their current curriculum. It was being able to, again, understand, have all the tools in the tool belt, but we are not advocating that any school district, we would hope that they would see the ability of teachers, but this has nothing to do with changing any curriculum in any school district.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, Senator Salzman, I'd like to congratulate you on the work on this bill. This is, I know, been a passion of yours for more than 2 years. And my question is simple, then. If you are not doing anything to that statute, why you wouldn't want to leave the word balanced in here to be consistent with what's in the statute?
Right. And to that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, what we're sort of doing here is that we're asking higher ed to teach the gold standard. Doesn't mean that they can't teach balance. But what we are describing on line 4.7 when we have struck the word balanced is that we're specifically saying board-approved teacher preparation programs must require instruction in the application of comprehensive, scientifically-based reading instruction programs. And those, and as we define comprehensive, scientifically-based reading instruction, it's the five strands. It is not, we are not saying you must teach phonics, you must teach phonemic awareness in all of the pieces that we've talked about. This is about balance. But balance means sometimes we're leaving something out. In terms of the use of reliable versus replicated, again, this is talking about in the strategies that are taught, we want to make sure that the replicated, that the instructional practice is based on replicated evidence. Again, the gold standard is taught. It does not say it includes or it must include at a minimum. It is not saying you can't teach other strategies. We just want to make sure that the gold standard, that that's included along with balance. And throughout, when you look at the people who have studied this, when you look at Reed Lyon, when you look at Ken Pugh at Yale University, they talk about balance. But if we don't have that core foundation, it's going to be difficult to develop comprehensive. It's going to be develop comprehensive. So we're looking at sort of like when we talked about the math test earlier, we need that strong foundation. We're getting better results when we make sure kids have a good foundation. So I am not touching, and I do want to note that the Association of Metropolitan School Districts does not have a specific position on this, and they are not testifying today against this bill.
Senator Rummel, Senator Olson, and we have maybe 10 more minutes we can devote or we'll have to lay over.
May I speak to the issue of replication, Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. We're also asking that the word replicated be struck, and this is extremely important because this wording means that programs have been replicated, and right now core programs that are used in our schools have not been replicated. When you go to the Institute of Scientific Education from the government and the What Works Clearinghouse that looks at intervention, only 24 programs have been vetted through them, and some of those with reservations. 27 have been looked at with greater reservation, and 836 cannot be evaluated. The federal government has not funded scientifically based research to vet these programs, and so programs are research based at this point and evidence based. And core instruction is vitally important. The word balanced and replicated are important words, and if they're in the other legislation, I'm asking you to leave balanced in here so that it is consistent and not confusing for school districts and teachers, and to strike replicated with reliable and evidence-based.
Senator Saltzman, I believe you indicated you did have at least one other amendment.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I have an author's amendment, and this is for the word. It is on, I believe, line 2.26 in my copy of the legislation, where an initial teacher license to provide direct instruction. I would like to strike the word direct and insert the words explicit, comma, sequential, comma, and systematic. And I believe those were words that were used earlier by our testifiers here at the table in describing this. So explicit, comma, sequential, comma, and systematic instruction.
Yeah. Line 2.26 on Senator Saltzman's motion to amend. Discussion. Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted.
Aye.
Senator Saltzman.
I would like to point again, this bill is not about school districts. It is about our teacher preparation program. So we would hope that teachers come to school districts better prepared, so we are spending less money on retraining teachers. We certainly want staff development. This does not, and I don't see where in this bill. I have asked Ms. McQuay in the past to look at this bill as to, is there anything in this that impacts a school district and what curriculum they choose, and there's nothing in this bill that does that.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Saltzman, I apologize. We went so fast over that amendment that I didn't have a chance to let it sink in, and my concern with the word sequential is that I want to make sure that teachers have a latitude when they're teaching students to understand where they're at. And so some students, you may, because of they're so progressed, you may skip over one thing or another. I actually was fine with the language the way you had it, and if you need to do explicit, I don't, you know, whatever. But I think we've actually taken a step backward in terms of rigidity with the word sequential. I'm not sure systematic is one way or another. It doesn't really matter, but I am concerned about sequential.
Senator Bonoff, if I might address that, Mr. Chair. Again, this is not mandating that teachers have to use these strategies. We just want to make sure that they have the skills. They have the best practices skills, and this is defining what that is. So it's not saying you have to teach it this way. It's, again, if you think about various tools in your tool belt, we want to make sure that they have the skill. Now, again, we talked earlier about not every child needs these, but wouldn't we want every teacher? And this explains the strategies that Mr. Savage talked about that have been so effective.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, I understand that that's your intent, but I think it could be easily misinterpreted by particularly a young teacher who says, well, it's the law. You have to go this, this, and this. And so I'm wondering,
Senator Bonoff, Mr. Chair.
It's a direction to the Board of Teaching.
That's okay.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. This is for higher education. It is not requiring a teacher. It's that this is requiring what we want higher ed to teach these kinds of strategies. It's not that a teacher would need to look at this law of how they implement it, but that they have the skills.
Okay. Ms. Kirchhoff, any additional comments? Mm-hmm. And I'll note that the potential motion would be that this would be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, meaning there would be the commitment by the author to continue working with others before any final action would be taken. So,
okay.
Ms. Kirchhoff.
We'd appreciate that and would very much appreciate the consistency in language so that the confusion the senator mentioned doesn't occur. It's really important that these are worked on all through a child's career.
Thank you. Senator Saltzman, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I'd like to move Senate File 866 as amended to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the Senate Education Omnibus Bill.
Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion
Thank you very
carries.
Much, committee.
And thank you, testifiers. Senator Bonoff. Senator Dahl?
I wanted to speak to that, but
we're going to do Senate File 1107 next. For 1107, please.
Mm-hmm. Senator Wieger, I'll let you proceed with Senate File 1107.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1107 addresses the Resource Center for Deaf and Hard of Hearing. and the advisory committee that we have in place, and it asks for that committee to provide some additional information that's needed. And we're going to ask advocates of the proposal to state why it is needed.
Good morning. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak with you this morning. My name is Joyce Dugard. I'm here on behalf of the Commission of Deaf, Deaf-Blind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans. I'm also a teaching specialist at the University of Minnesota in the program Preparing Teachers of Deaf, Hard of Hearing Students. The centerpiece of Senate File 1107 is accountability, an attempt to identify how we are doing in our roles as educators serving infants, children, and youth who are deaf and hard of hearing living in the state of Minnesota. This proposal values accountability from a multiple perspective. First and foremost, are we as specialists in the field of deaf, hard of hearing education making a difference? Are we doing our jobs, and are we doing them well? The most recent data regarding the performance of deaf students in Minnesota was reported in 1996 by the Gallaudet University Office of Demographic Studies. Since that time, NCLB and state testing have replaced national documentation of academic achievement. While 80% of the deaf, hard of hearing students in our state do participate in statewide testing, we have no results that can be used as indicators of achievement or of progress. Why should we test if we cannot access or use the data for its intended purpose? We are spending approximately $30 million per year serving 2,400 infants, children, and youth with hearing loss in our state. Are we getting what we pay for? Are the outcomes equivalent to the expenditures? Is this a Cadillac investment, or is it just the bare necessities? We really don't know. A second perspective of accountability is knowing where our children are being educated, how well they are doing in those settings. There are guesstimates of anywhere from 100 to 400 children with hearing loss being being served and receiving their schooling in private schools, some at a cost of $40,000 to $50,000 per year, paid for with state funds. Does this high-end investment yield greater academic outcomes? We really don't know. Currently, 28 of 50 states in the United States report outcome data for the purpose of accountability as well as improving educational outcomes for deaf and hard of hearing students. Unfortunately, Minnesota is not one of those states that collects educational outcomes on its students with hearing loss. We are requesting that, like our neighbors in Iowa and Wisconsin, the Minnesota Resource Center establish a valid and reliable system for reporting academic achievement and outcomes of students with hearing loss. I thank you for considering this bill, and special thanks to Senator Wigger for introducing it.
Thank you, Ms. Dugard. Are there any questions for the testifier? Okay. Welcome to the committee, I believe, Mr. Anderson.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tom Anderson, and I really appreciate you giving us a couple minutes of your time to listen. I am a parent of four deaf children, and I'm also a parent of two foster deaf children. So all six of my kids are in the program for deaf and hard of hearing. And there are different programs around the state. You have the state school for the deaf, you have mainstream programs, you have charter schools, and you have private schools. as a parent with deaf children, I want to know how they're doing. I want to know that my kids are in the right program, getting the right instruction. And I've asked different places. And they say, I'm sorry, we don't, that information's not available. And so as a parent, I think that that's not right, because I should be able to send my kids to the program that's going to meet their needs the best, and so that they're going to be as successful and productive as they can in the future. So I'd really like your support on this bill. It will make the previous bill that was passed stronger, and so that we can get the outcomes for our kids. Just like every other hearing parent who can find out how their kid is doing with their peers, we would like to be able to find out how our kids are doing. As a deaf parent with deaf children, I want to have that same information. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Any questions from the committee members? Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Anderson, thank you so much for your testimony. I have raised four children, and that has been challenging. I can't imagine doing that and then taking on two more. So thank you for doing that, and great work.
Thank you, Senator.
And any other questions? I believe our next testifier is Jared Treichel. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for this opportunity to let me testify on behalf of SF-1107 today. My name is Jared Treichel, and I'm a 16-year-old student and a junior at Minnesota North Star Academy, a bilingual charter school here in St. Paul. I have high goals for myself, and I believe that all deaf and hard of hearing students should also have high goals for themselves. This year alone, I'm the finalist at the RIT National Science Fair competition in New York, which I will be this weekend. Next month, I'll be in Washington, D.C., competing as a finalist at Gallaudet University's National Academics College Bowl. During summer break, I also keep busy. For the past few years, I participated in CSD's National Leadership Literacy Camp in South Dakota. And this last time, I was invited by the director to stay on as a junior counselor, which I really enjoyed every minute of. It is my mission to become the first deaf astronaut. After graduation, I plan to attend RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology in New York. From there, my next step will be NASA. My goal is for our deaf community here in Minnesota is to see an improvement of all aspects in the educational system. If the system in place does not provide some sort of feedback, how does anyone know if things are being done well or not? But fortunately, that the system has worked very well for me, thanks to the support of my family and teachers. But if it does not work for all deaf students, how are deaf students doing in other schools here in the metro or rural Minnesota? Please, we will never know unless we pass this bill. Please support all the passing of SF-1107 so that we can get the data needed to help us make sure that all deaf students are getting equal access and opportunities in education. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Treichel. Any questions for the testifier? Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Wieger, do we know if the department is going to put a fiscal note on this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, I have not received an indication from the department on this.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wieger and testifiers, I fully support what you are doing here. This is exactly why we want an accountability system, so that that gives us back the information we need to be able to improve our situation around the state. So I certainly support this work and hope we can get it all the way through the process.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I believe there's an amendment. It would be an author's amendment, and upon distribution,
yes.
I would like to move it.
Yes, Senator Wieger, we have the A1 amendment. As soon as everyone gets that,
Mr. Chair, maybe if Ms. McQuay or Dr. McQuay or Mr. Nauman could address to the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A1 amendment that's being passed out to you right now strikes language on page 2, lines 1 through 4, and inserts replacements of those two recommendations that the advisory committee must include to be aggregate data-based education outcomes over time for deaf and hard of hearing children consistent with state academic standards and assessments under 120B, and a data-based plan that includes evidence-based practices known to improve the educational outcomes of deaf and hard of hearing children.
Discussion on the A1 amendment. If not, Senator Wieger moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. A1 amendment carries. Any other testifiers? Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Treichel, I just wanted to wish you luck this weekend in New York.
And thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, thank you for your kind consideration. Senator Rummel mentioned we need a system that's accountable, transparent, and open for all students. All have a right to a dream. Their parents and other have the same expectation as every other Minnesota parent, and that's why we need to pass this. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate file 1107 as amended be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right, with that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Wieger, and testifiers. And thank you, Senator Wieger, for allowing me to chair the first education committee or any committee for that time. I really appreciated the opportunity.
Please continue. 1342.
Senator Bonhoff with the our last bill today, Senate File 1342. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I have before you Senate File 1342, which is a bill that is regarding alternative teacher licensure. And just to give you an overview of the bill, you know, we have talked about in this committee for some time that we understand that besides parents, teachers are really the greatest influence on our children and how they do in their education and, of course, beyond in their life. And so with that, we have also noted how disappointing it is that we do not have the kind of respect and reverence for teachers in our culture that exists in many other cultures. And I think that that will change in our time, that we have begun to have a cultural shift in that regard. And so because of that, I have been interested in any kind of policy change that would help make sure that, number one, we have the best and brightest young people going into teaching, number two, that we keep them in teaching, and number three, that we take advantage of the mid-level professionals as they transition during their lifetime so that we capture them when they're wondering what's next and get them in our classrooms. You know, I don't know that I'll be in politics forever, and maybe this is something I would take advantage of, and maybe others around this table would do that. But when we heard the bill earlier this session that the governor introduced for alternative licensure, I don't know about you, but I thought, whew, that's tough. I think I'd go teach in college instead, because it was still onerous. And so when the chamber approached me about carrying this bill, I jumped at the chance because I think it does set forward a different plan. And before I ask Ms. Smith to talk about the bill, I just wanted to also address the connection between this bill and an alternative program for getting these best and brightest children into our system, and that is the Teach for America program, and then you'll hear about another program as well. But my kids, I know I refer to my children often, but they are in the college years, and as my oldest was about to graduate, he was talking about his friends that he was going to school with, and he was saying, oh, they really want to be Teach for America, but, you know, that is so hard to get into. And it turns out that there's this very high-status program that really our very best students are competing to get into, Teach for America, and we were not having it in Minnesota. Well, that's about to change, and you'll hear that, and that's very exciting. But then there was still a glitch in the way that we licensed teachers that made it not advantageous for those young people, even if they were to come into Minnesota, to stay in Minnesota. And that's really what we're looking to accomplish. So this bill offers an alternative way for those young people to get licensed, as well as mid-career professionals to come into our state and give us the benefit of their wisdom in science, math, and in really in all the fields. So there is an amendment to the bill, but I didn't want to offer that at quite as yet because I wanted Ms. Smith first to take us over the essence of the bill, and then I'll offer the amendment.
Ms. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And my name is Stacia Smith. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I'm very appreciative of Senator Bonhoeff for carrying this bill. The business community supports initiatives to change the education system to improve student academic performance. And just to briefly explain why we're engaged in this issue and that the Chamber is actually supportive of something rather than opposed to something. And then I'll walk through the bill. The Chamber believes Minnesota's global economic competitiveness depends on its school system producing a highly educated and skilled workforce. One of our greatest challenges, as you all know, is the achievement gap between advantaged and disadvantaged students. We believe if poor-performing students are going to reach the level of their higher-performing peers, they may need some more support and some innovative ways of learning. And we know that teachers play a very important role in the lives of these children, often leaving an impact that can last a lifetime. Minnesota needs to ensure that our best people are leading our classrooms. Evidence shows that the quality of Minnesota students will not exceed the quality of their teachers. According to a study at the University of Tennessee, for example, if you take two average 8-year-olds, and give them different teachers, one high quality and one lower quality, their performance diverges by more than 50 percentile points within 3 years. Similar studies in Dallas and Boston show that students placed with high-performing teachers will progress 3 times faster than those students with low-performing teacher. In fact, it shows that students with low-performing teachers regress. Thus, the Minnesota Chamber supports proven measures to promote teaching excellence by recruiting, retaining, and supporting the highest quality candidates. As 40% of our teachers reach retirement over the next 10 to 15 years, I think this is extra crucial at this time to consider programs like this. Now, if I could walk you through the bill, and then we have some folks that will give examples of programs that would fit within this. To begin, under the requirements that this is creating a 2-year resident teacher license. So while students are in an alternative program, they would have this alternative licensure so they're able to teach. However, they wouldn't have their full licensure yet. These programs can be offered either by a college or university with board-approved programs or by a nonprofit corporation that's formed under an education-related purpose. So, for example, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce could not create a program. It would have to be someone like the Teach for America or St. Paul Teaching Fellows that was formed with an education-related purpose. In addition, the mission of that program has to be that it is ensuring working to reduce or eliminate the achievement gap. In order to participate in any of these programs, going on to second page, line 2.1, candidates must have a bachelor's degree and either a minimum 3.0, which I think we're going to talk about here, or if they don't have a minimum 3.0, they must have at least 10 years of relevant, successful professional work experience.
And at this point, members, I'd like to offer the A2 amendment. The A2 amendment does talk about the various ways in which a teacher can be licensed and can be qualified to be licensed. So you can see on page 2, line 6, we delete a qualifying score on a board-approved content area test, and we insert instead qualifying scores on board approved content area and pedagogy tests. And I know that Education Minnesota and the Board of Teaching has felt very strongly that pedagogy is critical in training teachers, and so that is why that is there. In addition, page 2 after line 6, we insert, the board may waive the minimum grade point average requirement in paragraph A, clause 1, for candidates with a grade point average of 2.75 or higher. And that was, I was asked to originally just put 2.75, and I felt that given this particular program is to say we want our best and brightest, that it's better to have a threshold of 3.0, but still give board discretion, because I have heard that in order to get the kind of diverse candidates we're looking for, it's better to give boards that flexibility, as well as in the areas of science and math. It's often very challenging, and so a 2.75 is in some cases perfectly acceptable. And then finally, we're changing in on lines 1.5 of the amendment. It says the board may, 1.7, we delete maximum 8 week, and we're inserting minimum 200 hour to give flexibility to these people. And then as we talk about training, we're changing classroom focus to classroom embedded. And then mentor is changing to mentorship team. So with that, I move the A2 amendment.
Senator Bonhoff has moved the A2. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. A2 amendment is passed.
And Mr. Chair, just to continue walking through the bill then. So we have the GPA requirement, the reading, writing, math skills test, the qualifying score on content area and pedagogy test. Then to move on to the characteristics on line 2.7. This program must offer a minimum 200 hours instructional phase that includes, assumes classroom responsibilities. The second characteristic is that you've got a research-based and results-oriented approach using best teaching practices. Number 3, that the strategy has to include pedagogy. Number 4, that the person in this program must be assessed, supervised, and evaluated to determine their needs throughout so that they're getting the support they need. Number 5, that formal instruction and peer coaching must be included. Number 6, you've got to have a high-quality, sustained, intensive staff development opportunity. So either a resident mentor or a mentorship team, which could be school administrators, teachers, or post-secondary faculty, must be giving feedback to the participants in this program. And then lastly, that whoever is participating in this program is demonstrating progress towards meeting the teacher entrance exams that we had discussed. Subdivision 3, the program approval on line 2.27, just says that the Board of Teaching is the one that will approve this. They're sort of the gatekeeper. We have been working with the Board of Teaching to work out this bill, and I believe that we've worked out most of any concerns and that they are okay with this bill. Subdivision 4 just says that this resident teacher license, so that temporary license, that an experienced teacher, that the mentorship team that's helping to guide these students, must make the recommendation as to whether or not that resident teacher should actually be able to get a standard license at the end, which I think is pretty typical. And then subdivision 5 and 6 basically says that once they complete that two-year resident teacher license and they've taught for 2 years, that they would actually then go and get a regular standard license, that they wouldn't be any subpar teacher, but they would be the same as everybody else. Thank you.
Ms. Smith, I know there's already an alternative teacher preparation licensing for teacher, and actually there's some similarities. What do you see as the key differences? And would the Board of Teaching have some problems determining which path to take in terms of implementing or oversight?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your question. The alternative teacher program that's already in statute is Section 122A.24, which we reference in the third line of this bill. No one uses that program. If you want to talk to Karen Ballmer, it has not been used by anybody because it's such an onerous process. I think probably one of the main differences is that this bill would allow a nonprofit corporation formed for educational related purpose to be the creator of this alternative pathway. In addition to that, I think there are, some of the requirements are a little different. Yeah.
Thank you. Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What
that's what I'm curious about.
What standards or criteria would these nonprofit groups have to meet in order to qualify for setting up an alternative program?
Thank you, Senator Rummel, Mr. Chair. All of the characteristics that are listed that I just walked through, starting on page 2, on line 2.7, those seven characteristics that are laid out are really the guiding principles that the Board of Teaching would use in deciding whether or not to give approval to this nonprofit.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, it would be up to the Board of Teaching to approve, and I think when we hear testimony from Matt Kramer from Teach for America, he could also address how that happens in various states.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Senator Bonhoff or Ms. Smith, does the Board of Teaching, do they believe there might be an additional cost with this? At least three different references to the Board of Teaching must in Subdivision 3, 5, and I think Subdivision 1. Do they see additional cost in terms of what they must do?
Mr. Chair, I'll call Karen Baumer to the table.
Ms. Baumer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff, this does fall under the purview of the Board of Teaching's authority and the scope of work that we are charged with. We do routinely approve programs that prepare teachers. That's already part of our work. This would be a new process that we would use for approving programs. We would certainly hope to engage a broad and diverse base of stakeholders in the development of the criteria that we would develop as per the language. So there may be a cost to us in that way. We want to make sure that when we develop those criteria that we get it right. I was asked to weigh in on a fiscal note and that's what I shared back, was that we would like to engage stakeholders. It does fall within our authority. We may incur some minimal costs in that way, but they would likely be minimal. Mr. Chair, if I may go back to an earlier question, if appropriate, relating to the current statute 122A.24.
Ms. Baumer.
That is on the books and has been there for many years. As Ms. Smith noted, it is not in use at this time. It was used extensively throughout the 90s. Particularly, there's language that ties that authority to the use of integration and desegregation funds. And that's one of the primary reasons that why we're not seeing it used right now, is that it needed to have that tie. Also, there's some obsolete language. For example, the testing requirements noted in the current statute don't reflect our current testing requirements. So it's outdated, and so those are some of the reasons why it's not being used extensively at this point as it has been in the past.
So, Ms. Baumer, is the Board of Teaching supportive of this bill?
Mr. Chair, yes, we are.
Mr. Kramer?
Mr. Chair, I'm pleased to introduce Matt Kramer, the President and Chief Program Officer of Teach for America, who I've been in conversations with for a couple years about his organization. So welcome.
Thank you for having me. Good morning. My name is Matthew Kramer, and I am the President of Teach for America. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today in support of SF1342, which would create an alternative teacher preparation program and a resident teacher license. I've been asked to testify about whether this bill would work to allow Teach for America Corps members to teach in the state of Minnesota, and it will. As you all know, our state has among the very largest achievement gaps in the nation in academic outcomes across groups of students, Black versus white, Hispanic versus white, eligible for free lunch versus not. Though our average results rank among the highest in the country, the cause of our achievement gap is not because our wealthiest communities are outliers at the top, but because children growing up in Minnesota's poorest communities are at a greater disadvantage than children growing up in almost any other state in the country. The sad reality that the zip code of a child's birth plays such a central role in determining his or her life prospects is an affront to our ideals as Minnesotans and as Americans, and this is the problem that Teach for America exists to solve. Teach for America is building the movement to eliminate educational inequity by enlisting our country's most promising future leaders in the effort. We recruit, select, train, and support a core of outstanding recent college graduates and professionals of all academic majors and career interests who commit to teach for 2 years or more in low-income public schools and through their experiences become lifelong leaders in the effort to expand educational opportunity. This year, over 35,000 people applied to Teach for America, including 25% of the senior class at Spelman, 11% of all Ivy League seniors in the country, and large numbers of seniors from McAllister, Carleton, Gustavus, St. John, St. Olaf, the University of Minnesota, and other schools across Minnesota. From this group, we will select approximately 4,000 to teach in communities across the country using a rigorous selection model built on nearly our two decades of experience. Our 2008 core had an average GPA of 3.6, 95% held leadership positions on college campuses. Approximately one-third of them were people of color, and our 2009 core is shaping up to be even stronger. Once in the classroom, Teach for America core members go above and beyond traditional expectations to make life-changing academic gains with their students. Over the last two decades, we have dedicated substantial time and energy and resources to strengthening our approach to teacher preparation and development in order to maximize our impact in the classroom. Our program is entirely and pragmatically focused on what we have learned it takes to help students in low-income communities succeed. We operate an intensive pre-service training program, including student teaching and instruction by Teach for America faculty, work collaboratively with institutions of higher education, help core members set and keep high expectations, provide ongoing support through our staff of nearly 200 full-time instructional coaches who visit classrooms, review student work, and help core members adjust their approach based on classroom data and improve their practice. A growing body of high-quality research demonstrates that Teach for America teachers perform at least as well and often better than other teachers. For example, the Urban Institute recently found that the incremental impact of having a Teach for America teacher was three times greater than the incremental impact of having a veteran traditionally prepared in-field teacher. The experience of having significant academic gains in low-income classrooms is transformative for our core members in the same way it was for Mr. Savage, who we just heard from a moment ago. As Teach for America teachers discovered through firsthand experience that it is possible to close the achievement gap, that kids growing up in poverty can achieve at the same levels as their more affluent peers when given the opportunity, their dedication to eliminating educational inequity becomes a lifelong commitment. Since Teach for America's founding in 1990, over 20,000 people have entered the program. While less than 10% of them would have otherwise chosen to enter the field of education, more than two-thirds of our alumni from the last two decades are continuing to work full-time in education today. Half of those are still teaching, and approximately 400 are serving as principals. While Teach for America is not currently operating in Minnesota, we are seriously considering bringing our first group of core members to Twin Cities schools this coming fall, starting in Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, and charter schools across the metropolitan area. This bill would be an important enabler of that effort. Because there is no resident teacher license in Minnesota today, we would have to operate through Minnesota Board of Teaching annual waivers, and core members would have to teach on temporary limited licenses. Neither of these are sustainable approaches over the long term, and both will serve to dissuade prospective core members from choosing to teach in Minnesota, since they will have no assurances that the program would continue for their second year. Furthermore, because of the absence of a workable alternative preparation program, our teachers will be subject to a certification framework that is designed for traditional programs. Core members will need to retake coursework that they have already mastered, and the design of the program will not fully take advantage of the fact that they are already full-time classroom teachers. Again, both of these factors will dissuade the most talented prospective core members from choosing to teach in Minnesota's highest need classrooms. This bill creates a framework that can solve all of these problems and gives the Minnesota Board of Teaching the flexibility to approve high-quality programs to prepare non-traditional candidates in alternative ways. Minnesota has historically been a leader in education reform in many ways, and we have a long and proud tradition of educational excellence. While the emergence of the current achievement gap is a significant blemish on that record, the success we see in classrooms and schools across the state and country shows us that it is indeed a solvable problem, and one that I believe Minnesotans have a growing will to solve. Passing SF-1342 is a critical step to allowing non-traditional candidates, such as those recruited by and trained by Teach for America, to become part of the solution. Thank you to the authors for this bill.
Thank you. Senator Saltzman?
And on this point, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kramer, we've had conversations, and I want to commend you for being here in Minnesota, because we don't have a site, but to have the executive director here is excellent, and president. This is an excellent bill. I think that it addresses some of the things that we've talked about earlier about young people who go to college and really don't know if they want to go into education, but are pursuing four-year degrees and are becoming extremely competent young people, and then think, maybe I'd like to be a teacher. And going through this, I do want to note that I've seen your curriculum, and I do want to note, since we've been talking about reading, I was extremely impressed with the manual about scientific-based reading instruction. It was excellent. It covered the five strands. So with that, I just want to rest my case that I'm very impressed with this. It has to have good reading instruction in order to pass the Saltzman test. But I do want to just say that this is an excellent program, and I think that we look at our young people today and opportunities and doing things a little differently. The other thing I think that's important about Teach for America and that model is the ongoing support that they receive, that I watched a video as my son went through the selection process for Teach for America and saw that the ongoing support that is given on weekends, given in classrooms, that we've talked about how do we continue to support young teachers develop their skills. So in that respect, I think it's a very well-written bill, and it has my enthusiastic support.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman. And we have a session at 11, so we have two more testifiers. So quickly, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bonoff. I, too, have a lot of acquaintances and young people in my life that have gone through Teach for America, and it is truly an admirable program. My question, and I'm not opposed to this bill, but my question is, at least as a school board member, it seems to me we have a lot of young people that leave our teaching institutions that don't get jobs. And so is there something in this that directs young people to a particular kind of work? I'm not saying this very well, but do we have a surplus of candidates for teaching teaching? Do we need this bill?
Thank you for the question. This bill is not designed to solve the question of numerical shortages. It's designed to solve the question of districts feeling like they need access to additional stream of very talented people to help them solve achievement gaps. So there are talented people coming out of all sources of teacher preparation, including every traditional teacher college in the state of Minnesota. But districts say that in addition to the talented folks they get from those sources, they also want this additional way to recruit very talented people who come to the decision to teach later in their college career. And so that's what this solves. It's not about a numerical shortage. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, that has been the concern and why this effort has not happened yet in Minnesota, and I think that we ought to put our children first and say, let's let every qualified young person be enticed to come and teach in our schools.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, congratulations for your work on this. This is very important work, and I'm delighted that you're doing this. And I just wanted to tell Mr. Kramer that you might not be here, but your presence has been really noticed, because I have been invited to so many meetings in the Latino community and the African-American community to hear about this program. And I think it will be very important that we do have a presentation about Teach for America and really review some of the work that you've done in other states in the country. I'm very excited about it, and I have... I really think that there is a lot of excitement right now within communities of color in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, there are letters in the packet, so the two testifiers I have left, they know that they'll need to be very brief, and we'll respect that. And there are in your packet, there's a letter from Dr. Karstarfin, the superintendent of St. Paul, and Dr. Green, superintendent of Minneapolis. Thank you.
Ms. Barrett, if you could keep your comments to a minute or two.
Mr. Chair, I promise I will. My name is Nora Barrett. I'm the site manager for the St. Paul Teaching Fellows Program. The St. Paul Teaching Fellows Program is a partnership between the St. Paul Public Schools, the New Teacher Project, which is a national nonprofit that works to recruit and retain high-quality teachers, and the U.S. Department of Education through a Transition to Teaching grant. St. Paul Public Schools initiated this program to find high-caliber career professionals to fill positions that they cannot historically fill with licensed teachers. These areas of teacher scarcity are math, science, K-12 special education, and bilingual elementary education. In the past, St. Paul Public Schools has been forced to fill these positions with individuals on special permissions or long-term substitutes, many of whom are not highly qualified teachers. The Fellows Program casts a wide net to find excellent teachers to work with the children who need them the most. This year, we had 685 applications for the 25 to 30 positions we are now filling in St. Paul Public Schools. To ensure that we find the strongest candidates, we employ a rigorous selection process. To facilitate this process, we train St. Paul Public Schools teachers, principals, and administrators in our selection model so that they will interview and select candidates. The interviews are day-long events, and we interviewed over 200 candidates this year. One principal who was an interviewer, who was particularly skeptical about the program at the start of the year, approached me at the end of the interview process on our last interview event and said that he could not wait to have fellows in his classroom because he was so impressed by their skill and their tenacity. Last year, we hired 40 teachers through this process. All were from the Twin Cities. The average GPA was 3.3, and 34% had master's degrees. Candidates who are accepted into the program must pass all required praxis exams. As more as evidence of the strength of these people, 97% of those accepted last year passed all three exams without any teacher preparation courses. Before entering the classroom, candidates must complete our six-week intensive summer institute, where they practice teaching in the morning in St. Paul Public Schools and attend our Teaching for Student Achievement framework sessions. This framework encapsulates what we know about the best practices in the field as determined by research methodologies and teacher practice. The Institute is also run by talented St. Paul Public Schools teachers and includes St. Paul Public Schools-specific workshops. When fellows begin teaching, they are supported by St. Paul Public Schools mentors and coaches, and the fellows program provides a training resource manager who helps fellows find the necessary resources within the school district. While the program has only been running for 1 year, there have been independent value-added studies on more established teaching fellows programs, like our program in New York, which is by far our largest and longest-running program, that show that teaching fellows make huge leaps in their second and third year and often surpass traditionally prepared teachers in terms of their effectiveness in raising student achievement. This is particularly remarkable when you consider they are placed in the schools that serve the highest need of populations in the lowest income places. In addition, there are significant studies showing that New York City Teaching Fellows has helped close the quality gap between teachers in high-income and low-income schools. St. Paul needs this program to find high-quality teachers to fill areas of shortage. Currently, St. Paul has to ask the Board of Teaching yearly to grant special permissions for this program to exist, putting the program in potential jeopardy annually, and as Matt noted, also making fellows reconsider the option of joining the program because they're not sure if they'll be able to teach for a second year. With the passage of this bill, Senate File 1342, St. Paul Public Schools will know that they can recruit and retain these dedicated individuals in these critical need areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Grathwall?
Mr. Chair, members, Jim Grathwall, Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you for 30 seconds here. Senator Bonner, thank you very much. Minneapolis Schools strongly supports the bill. Please read the letter in your packet by the superintendent. I can't say it better. You've supported alternative licensure programs in the past. My deputy superintendent came through Q, Collaborative Urban Educator Program, Bernadia Johnson. You've seen her before this committee before. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Ms. Bonhoff, does maybe you can answer this. Does the business community, some might look at this as actually lowering teacher standards, and we keep talking about teacher quality, and I know you're trying to get another group of talent out of the business community. But, we do have some very talented people that are looking for jobs, as Senator Rumble alluded to, coming out of college. Are we watering down the requirements at all on first glance?
Mr. Chair, I do not believe so because of the very rigorous training, preparation, and classroom-embedded mentoring that goes on with these alternative programs, so that, in fact, I think that we are equal to the regular program, and this just gives us another crack at making sure that all of our kids are getting the best possible education we can provide.
Senator Saltzman?
There's just briefly, Mr. Chair. We heard Mr. Savage talk earlier today about high expectations. And when I have seen the interview process that Teach for America uses to, one of the first requirements is that every young person, I think, who goes into that program has high expectations for the students that they're going to teach. That's something that it's very hard to measure or test for. But I just know that in this particular program, getting in isn't just you have a 3.0 or 3.8 or whatever it is. It's the several different interviews of really talking to people about overcoming obstacles. And that, I think, is something that it's hard to put into statute. But that's something that is just very important about this program and why I think it is so successful. It's the skills, but also it's the attitude that we will ensure that these children achieve.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman. Is there anyone here, anyone else in the room to testify today? Any other questions for Senator Saltzman or the testifiers? Senator, what did I say?
Saltzman.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Or Senator Saltzman. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 1342 be.
I guess there is someone. I'm sorry to interrupt. Was there someone quickly? Education Minnesota.
I'm here with Education Minnesota, and I'll just give you two bullet points.
Say your name again, Ms. Franklin, in the microphone.
Franklin, Education Minnesota.
We at
Education Minnesota that we deal with teacher preparation and licensing and continuing education on a regular basis. It is important to us to have the very highest quality teachers in our state schools, not only for our communities, but also for our membership. We have higher quality members when we have higher quality teachers. We have some very real concerns about Teach for America as it's been implemented. And just with details, we know they're dedicated, we know they're energetic, and we know they're very well funded. We do have some trouble giving perspective to not-for-profit organizations to prepare teachers. We have some real concerns making partially prepared teachers quasi-licensed responsible for our students before they are fully licensed without a full-time induction/mentor program there. And there are other concerns. This is, I just saw the bill for the first time a moment ago. We'll be happy to elaborate in writing at a later time. But there are big concerns within both the teacher prep and the practicing educator community regarding this. This is not to say that we are against alternative pathways. There are multiple pathways to any mountain peak, but there are some standards that we think our students need to see met before they're in a classroom with someone they call a teacher.
Thank you, Ms. Franklin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 1342 be recommended to pass for possible and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and I will leave it at that, but I will continue to have conversations with Education Minnesota.
All right. Senator Bonhoff moves 1342 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the education omnibus bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.
Very good.
Thank you, Chuck.
Appreciate it.
Yes.
Time.